Hi, this is Joe McNally, and you're listening to the 100th episode of the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Enjoy.
This episode is sponsored by our friends at FreshBooks. The weather is better, and if you're a freelance photographer or a small business owner, you'd much rather be out in it shooting rather than dealing with paperwork, right? And that's where the cloud-based accounting software from FreshBooks comes in. To sign up for your 30-day free trial, go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you, FreshBooks, for your support. Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, our 100th episode. In this episode, we have a very special 100th episode after show. Is Nikon One actually dead? Flash's days are certainly numbered. 500px has an insanely cool tool. Brooks Institute students seem to be out of luck. And a photographer learns a lesson about insuring his gear. All that and more in episode 100 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Joe, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, brother. Who in the world of photography doesn't know the name Joe McNally? The Nikon ambassador has been busy shooting the Olympics in Rio, and we're thankful he was able to take the time to open this, our milestone 100th episode. When I thought about who I'd ask to record the intro for this episode, Joe McNally's name was at the very top of the list. As a former photojournalist, I've long admired Joe's work in National Geographic and the contributions he's made to what each and every one of us love, photography. Joe's amazing career has spanned more than three decades. He was the last staff photographer at Life magazine. He's won countless awards and is perhaps best known for a project near and dear to him called Faces of Ground Zero, Portraits of the Heroes of September 11th. A project that featured 246 giant Polaroid portraits shot near Ground Zero across a three-week period shortly after 9/11. And sales of the corresponding book raised over $2 million for 9/11 relief efforts. He has an incredibly long list of commercial clients, and if you don't visit his popular blog at blog.joemcnally.com, you'll be missing out on a ridiculously incredible resource, not only for incredible images, but great insight into creating great images yourself. Joe McNally is a true master of photography in an industry where the rest of us are just trying to put all the pieces together. And you know what? I think he shot the photo that's on the box. I know, dad jokes this early in the episode. It's our 100th, what can I say? Let's move on. His books, The Hot Shoe Diaries and The Moment It Clicks, are required reading in my mind, and you'll find those and more over at his website, joemcnally.com. Thank you so much for doing this, Joe. It is truly an honor. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in our milestone episode 100 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. All these episodes later, we still appreciate you all so much, and thank you for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you hitting that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode, as well as telling all your friends on social media and elsewhere and helping to get the word out about this show. As I said a number of episodes ago, this is going to be a regular episode, except for after the show, there's a 100th episode after show, so you definitely want to stick around for that. In it, you're going to hear me answer questions about this show, things maybe you've always wanted to know, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. For the 100th time, let's hit it. You've heard me say many times here on the show that if you're going to leave your expensive gear somewhere, it could be stolen. And that includes in your house while you're not there. So you need to have insurance. After all, if you don't have insurance and someone takes your gear, you're out of luck. No one is replacing it. Insurance is pretty much your only shot at that point. Unless you're independently wealthy, not having insurance is an expensive risk to take. But even then, if you have insurance, it's usually for used value. So you're buying someone else's used gear and probably having to kick in money yourself. Now, of course, an inland marine policy gives you full replacement value. But as with anything having to do with insurance, make sure you read it carefully and know exactly what your policy covers. And that's what Danish photographer Mads Peter Iversen did, especially after he was robbed in the past. But while he thought he was completely covered with the insurance company, and they told him that it was for all forms of theft, that apparently wasn't exactly 100% correct. You see, when it comes to theft from a vehicle, his insurance company will only pay for the claim if there's obvious signs of a break-in. In other words, if you're filing a claim for gear stolen from your trunk, there had better be crowbar marks on it. And insurance companies do this, of course, to mitigate the chances of people lying and saying their gear was stolen. They figure you're not likely to break open your trunk and cause a lot of damage to your car just to file a claim for some gear. So imagine Iverson's surprise to find this all out recently as he, his girlfriend, and some friends were vacationing in Lithuania. While they were at lunch one day, a thief apparently used an electronic device to calmly pop open his trunk, grab their backpacks, close it as if it was his own car, and make off with the loot without anyone knowing. At least that's the most likely scenario here. Remember, there wasn't any damage to his trunk or anywhere else in the car. The stuff was just simply gone. The photographer, his girlfriend, and their friends had got done eating lunch, headed somewhere else when he decided he needed his camera, popped open the trunk, and it wasn't there. Gone was about $4,500 US worth of gear, including his Canon 5D Mark III and a Tamron 24-70mm f2.8. So for 2 years, he paid for insurance that, as it turns out, gave the insurer a reason to deny his claim. And that's exactly what they did. You know, these sorts of electronic break-ins are on the rise because thieves wait for you to arm your car, capture the code, and then with a device that they have, instantly clone your remote, basically. They can then easily get into your car and be off with your stuff in seconds. And no one would even think that it was a break-in. They would see the trunk pop open and figure you're just the owner of the car taking your stuff. So how do you guard against this? You know, if you absolutely must leave your gear in your car unattended, I think that using an ExoMesh device such as those from PackSafe and others is going to be extremely helpful. That way, when a thief pops open your trunk, they see that you have this metal mesh around your gear and it's looped through the metal in your trunk and it's staying put. When that trunk pops open, they're not expecting to encounter that. And unless they're confident that you're going to be gone for a long time and no one else is going to see them, what are the chances that they're going to go back to their car or wherever, get wire cutters, come back, take a few minutes to snip away at that ExoMesh, and take the chance of people seeing what they're doing and going to prison? Because it increases by the second for them. They want to get in, get out. Now, they're going to wonder what you have in there of value, of course, because if you've taken the trouble to put this ExoMesh around the stuff, there's got to be something expensive in there. But again, they're not going to take the risk of getting caught just to take that. They're just going to go pop someone else's trunk instead. And if it's in a really touristy area, they have plenty of available victims, of course. And especially in those areas, they know that in just about every trunk is something of value, often cameras. Now, we don't usually recommend a specific insurance company here on the show, and this is not an ad, but in the comments for this story over at the Petapixel Mothership, quite a few people recommended the Travelers as a company with excellent coverage for stolen gear, with a few commenters saying that even if they misplace their gear, they're covered. So if you're doing a search for insurance, maybe start with the Travelers, and also, of course, see what else is out there. I tell you, no one ever thinks that they're going to be a victim of a crime, but it happens. And you're just not going to be able to defend against an electronic device that'll pop open your trunk at will. I think that at very, very least, get something like PackSafe. They have newer models with tighter mesh so you can't slip a lens through it. Mine is the older model, and I used to use it all the darn time when I was a photojournalist, and for whatever reason, I had to leave some of my gear in the trunk. Along with insurance, I had peace of mind knowing that I at very least was slowing them down or outright discouraging a thief. Since my gear was insured, I mostly used the ExoMesh to keep me from having to deal with the nightmare of filing a claim and waiting for a check. You know, when you're a working photographer, you need your gear to stay put, right? Why deal with waiting weeks to get a check and then having to go buy used gear when you need your stuff tomorrow or today? If insurance to cover your gear should it get stolen is outside your budget, then an ExoMesh might be a decent option in the meantime. They're about $100 or so US, and I think they give you a great deal of peace of mind. Next. Okay, my mind has been blown once again, and this time it's the folks over at 500px doing it. I don't know who's dreaming this stuff up, but talk about creative genius over there. What I'm referring to is their new tool, called Splash, which lets you search for photos in an incredibly creative way. Seriously, mind blown. Rather than searching using keywords, EXIF data, or even colors, Splash allows you to search for photos by sketching them out. Don't worry though, you don't have to be Picasso here. You just have to very basically sketch out what you're looking for. In the extremely simple online sketch pad, you select your brush size, color, and roughly draw what it is you're looking for. If you draw blue across the top of the frame, you'll get pics mostly with lots of sky in them. Draw that same thing across the bottom of the frame, and that's right, lots of water. Draw a lot of green, and you get photos with lots of grass in them. That makes a lot of sense, right? And that's the whole point of this new tool that they've developed. If you've got better drawing skills than I do, which is most people, and you want to be more specific with your drawing, you may. And as a result, your photos will be more specific. One of the examples they give, which actually I can handle, is orange across the top, black across the bottom, and a big yellow ball in the middle. And as a result, you get photos of a very orange sky with a dark foreground and the sun in them. I don't know how they do this. Somehow they figured this out. It is amazing. What's really cool, though, is you can refine your drawing as you go, and the results change along with that. So that is pretty darn helpful. You don't have to start from scratch. You can also filter the results you get with categories like landscapes, animals, people, travel, city, etc. So if you're looking for a photo of a dog and you only get photos of people instead, you can change that to animals. 500px Labs has been hard at work creating things to roll out for its users, and Splash is the first of them. It's still in beta, but if you want to give it a try, head on over to labs.500px.com. Listen, it's a solid 3.5, maybe 4 minutes of fun, and I really enjoyed using it, actually. I think it's pretty darn cool, and I can see how it's not only going to be helpful for looking for photos to license that you just can't describe in words, perhaps, but also as an inspiration tool. I say mess around with it, see what you come up with, and then challenge yourself to go photograph something like that. There's a lot of people that contact me and they're like, I just don't know what to photograph. So head on over to labs.500px.com, mess around with this thing, whatever it comes up with, go photograph that. That would be your challenge right there. Or use it to see what other inspiration you can glean from it. I think it's pretty darn cool. You got to check it out, even if it's just a few minutes of fun. Next. As we always say here on the podcast, thanks to the amazing technology available to us, sharing our photos is so easy. And so is running your business if you use FreshBooks. Whether you make your money with photography or you have another small business, you'd rather be shooting and editing your photos than dealing with paperwork, right? I know I would. Well, FreshBooks solves this problem by making it incredibly fast and easy. Their amazingly simple cloud-based invoicing solution keeps your cash flow details all in one place so you know exactly who you've invoiced, who's paid, who hasn't, and what your income is. And their FreshBooks mobile app is awesome. It lets you take pics of your receipt and organize them later so you have them all ready to go come tax time. Do yourself a favor and check out FreshBooks. You'll be more prepared, less stressed, and you can get back to enjoying your life and doing what you love most. Amazingly, on average, FreshBooks users get paid a full 2 weeks faster when accepting online payments. They cut 2 days a month of administrative tasks, and they double the revenue in the first 24 months. More time shooting means more time to make money rather than shuffling papers. And right now, FreshBooks is offering a free 30-day trial to our listeners. Just go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you so much, FreshBooks. If you have a website for your photography business, or just a website in general, actually, and it's built with Flash, pretty soon, very few people are going to be able to see it. I mean, they can still see it, but it's going to be a big pain in the butt for them. Now, iPhones, iPads, etc. have shunned Flash from the start, of course. Apple famously omitted support for it, citing security reasons. And you know what? It is super easy for hackers to compromise your site, your visitors, etc. with Flash. So that's why it wasn't in there. That's also why Adobe nags you constantly to update Flash. Now, adding insult to injury, scammers even use that technique online to get your info. They'll trick you into updating Flash, but you're actually installing malware, and that's just not cool. And it's all this craziness that pushed companies to bring about the end of Flash, and you know what? No one's going to miss it. In June of 2016, Apple announced that its Safari browser will block it, Firefox will be doing it in 2017, and now Google has officially announced that the Chrome browser will be doing it as well. As for Chrome, Flash will be blocked starting with Chrome 53 this September 2016. That's next month as I record this. So if your site isn't free of Flash, you'll have a little bit time more to take care of that. But that's not much time, so you need to get on it. When Apple's Mac OS Sierra comes out, Safari will block Flash, and visitors to sites that use it will get a message which asks them if they want to use it on that website. It says, quote, "To improve security and save energy, Safari only turns on the Flash plugin when you request it," end quote. Now, by default, you can click the button that says use once, or you can click use every time and never be asked again for that site, or you can click cancel. So if your site does use Flash and someone hits it, they're presented with a pop-up that talks about security. And I think that most people are likely going to cancel because they're expecting your website to just show up, right? Not get a weird pop-up talking about security. And that's not what you want. You want people to come on into your site. But not many people are going to be motivated to do that. Now, when Chrome updates to version 53, there's going to be a similar pop-up. And again, any barriers to reaching your site is going to be just that, a barrier. If you were getting 1,000 visits to your website now, you know, people actually being inside your website, I would hazard a guess that it's going to be 1/10 of that because most people are just going to punch out of there. Also, I think it signals to people that your website is outdated or you just don't care because most websites they go to, they're not going to be getting that message. So if they hit yours and they get that, they're going to be like, forget it, I'm out of here. That's just the reality. That's how it's going to be. I think mostly photographers love Flash-based websites because it makes it more difficult for people to download their images. But if people really want them, they're going to screenshot them, of course. And that's what they've been doing all along. If they really, really want your photos, they'll get them. You know, Flash has been dead for a while now, for most people at least. But if you have a site that's built on Flash and you haven't switched yet, this should definitely be a motivating factor. There are many alternatives out there. There's Squarespace, Photo Shelter, and others. They're all based on HTML5. They're all amazing. They're like 10 bucks a month or so. That's really not too bad. You really could get away with not hiring a web designer anymore. A number of years ago, it might cost you $1,000, $2,000 to create your website. These days, 10 bucks a month. It is so darn easy. And you can do it in a flash. All right, another dad joke. It's our 100th episode. Let's deal with it. Next. Raise your hand if you own a Nikon 1 series mirrorless camera or know someone who does. Okay, I see three of you out there. And that's part of the problem. These haven't exactly been big sellers for Nikon, or you'd actually see people using them. You don't. It's always, I think my wife's cousin's hairdresser has one of those. Oh, wait, no, it's something else, actually. It's pink. You get the point. You know, they're not at all terrible cameras either. They're actually definitely really good cameras. They just don't tick all the boxes that consumers need ticked, or they'd be a success. And they're not. Believe it or not, next month, September 2016, marks 5 full years that these things have been out. I mean, that's just amazing. But the end may be near for them. For one, there hasn't been a new 1 series body announced in like a year and a half or so. I mean, that's all you really need to know. I mean, it kind of speaks for itself. Our friends at DP Review recently reviewed Canon's EOS M3 mirrorless camera when they said what many were thinking, and I said here many months ago, you know, and that is that the Nikon One system has quietly been deprecated. They said, quote, "Trying to figure out where the EOS M3 fits into the mirrorless landscape is tough. Its closest peers, based on prices and features, are the Fujifilm X-A2, EOS EM10 Mark II, and Sony A6000. We're leaving Nikon One cameras out of the list as we believe the series is no longer being developed," end quote. Nikon rumors also saw this and they note, quote, "Yes, DP Review thinks that the Nikon One cameras are no longer being developed and they are a website known for not publishing any speculations online," end quote. This is very true. I've asked contacts in the Nikon universe about the One series and they talk about it like it's the redheaded stepchild of the family. I have two redheaded stepchildren, ironically, but that's neither here nor there. So let's move on. Let's pretend that did not happen. You know, no one ever talks about the One series. I'm not talking about photographers. I'm talking about Nikon people. You just don't talk about something that hasn't had an update since way back in early 2015. You just don't talk about it. Otherwise, it draws attention to it. Again, just like you don't hear anyone at Sony talking about the A-mount system anymore. Do you see new cameras and lenses coming out on a regular basis? No, you do not. You do with Canon and Nikon's DSLR systems, of course. I mean, even if it is the embarrassing update that was the D3400, or Franken D3300, as I'm going to call it from now on. Because that's exactly what it is. It's a D3300 patched together with some other nonsense, stuff taken away, and it's a new camera. Franken D3300. Nobody has heard a One series rumor in forever now. And it's my belief that next month at the big Photokina show in Germany, we're going to see its replacement, an actual viable mirrorless system from Nikon. And you know what? If Nikon wants to make people happy, it'll use their F-mount glass. If not, consumers are going to be so, so disappointed with them. If it does use their current crop of lenses, consumers just need to buy a body, a mirrorless body that Nikon makes, and not a whole new group of lenses because no one wants to do that. That would be a complete non-starter. The mothership asked Nikon for a comment on its One series, and they said, quote, "Nikon does not comment on future products or speculation," end quote. So there's that. I mean, that's what they usually say when we ask about things, so that was kind of predictable. But we had to ask. RIP Nikon One series. Now we know what that smell is in that one guy's camera bag. Next. In episode 98, I told you about how after 70 years, the once iconic Brooks Institute is closing its doors after the current semester, and about how things were up in the air for its students. Those students who were hoping to get a Brooks degree would have to let go of that dream as it's no longer possible, and maybe get their credits transferred somewhere else and finish up their degree. You know, you were wanting a Brooks degree, and instead, you got Boise State. Not quite the same thing. When it comes to colleges, accrediting is huge. And while Brooks Institute, a for-profit institution, was accredited nationally by ACICS, it wasn't regionally by WACS. Most of the nonprofit big-name schools that you've heard of are regionally accredited as well, and generally do not accept credits transferred from for-profit schools, which only hold national accreditation. So that presents a problem for Brooks students, and one that wasn't their fault at all. I mean, they didn't know the school would be suddenly closing, right? Especially when there were plans to move downtown and revamp things to attract more students. All right, I guess you can make the case that declining enrollment and the plan to move downtown was a sign for the newer students. But those that had been there for a few years entered when things were entirely different and not quite this grim. Since the story broke, many have spoken out about the once great Brooks Institute, with 2014 graduate Matthias Jordan telling the Petapixel mothership, quote, "Your article on the closure of Brooks Institute was how I learned about the closure of my alma mater. I was left with a mess of emotions, ranging from disbelief to anger. The writing may have been on the wall, as seen by the dwindling enrollment rates, but the sudden closure came as a shock. At this point, I have my degree and I am in the workplace. If I ever want to go back to school, I will have options. But there is a very, very high chance that the current students will be unable to transfer their credits," end quote. Jordan says that back in 2013, he considered transferring schools, but soon discovered that most nonprofit schools won't accept credits from an ACICS school. Further, after graduation, he looked for a temporary teaching job, and his Brooks degree presented him with an unanticipated problem. Of this, he says, quote, "During my time searching for a job, I looked into substitute teaching and discovered that the California public education system does not recognize ACICS accredited schools. This also applied to many of the larger private schools that relied on state funding," end quote. You know, what a mess, right? He would had to have known before going to the Brooks Institute that he might want to teach afterward and ask all the right questions to make sure he was covered, but he didn't. Who would? Few would have known that. Maybe those who wanted to teach, but I bet most of them wouldn't have known that either. Jordan was lucky, though. He got a degree, but those that haven't completed theirs yet have quite limited options, it seems, at the moment. And of that, he says, quote, "To my knowledge, this limits current students who are looking to transfer to another university to finish their education. State schools likely will not accept transfer credits from a school lacking regional accreditation, which leaves a small selection of groups like the Art Institute and the Academy of Arts, and even then, it will be at the school's discretion," end quote. Again, you wanted a Brooks degree, and instead, you have to settle for the Art Institute. Nothing wrong with that place, but still, it's not quite Brooks. But then again, Brooks hasn't been Brooks for a while, so there's that. Now, hopefully they can work things out for the students. You know, it's not their fault. It's bad enough that they're never going to have their Brooks degree that they dreamed of, right? Imagine if you've been there for 3.5 years, and you were just a semester or so away from getting your degree. Amazing. You know, you could get a full refund, which doesn't seem like it's going to happen, of course, and that still won't fix the problem for you. You might have your money back, but 3 whole years of your life were wasted. 3 years that you could have been at a different school about a year or so away from your degree. And that's what they thought they had at Brooks. Now, the Petapixel mothership reached out to Brooks for comment, but we have yet to hear back from them. If we do, that'll be in the story linked from the show notes for episode 100 at petapixel.com/podcast. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 100 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to stick around for the after show where I answer your questions. It's going to be a great time. Everything you wanted to know about this show, or at least a lot of it, I answer in the after show. Also, don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, feel free to email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, and I hope you all do, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. And don't forget, if you're buying anything and you use Amazon, definitely go to lensshark.com first, my website, hit my Amazon affiliate link, and I would greatly appreciate it. It's a great way for you to help support this show. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention FreshBooks. They have a 30-day free trial for you. Head on over to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. All right, with that, I'll see you all in the after show, so stay tuned. All right, if you stuck around this long, you're either a true fan of this podcast or you didn't get to the pause button quickly enough, right? This is our milestone 100th episode, as you know, and this right here that you're listening to is the after show. Now, a few episodes back, I reached out to ask what you guys would like to know about me and or the show, so that's what we're going to be doing here in our first ever after show. Okay, with that, I'm still Sharky James. I mean, nothing's changed in the past half hour. Not doing a name change or anything. Let's get to your questions. All right, ladies first. So here's a question from Claire Howley in Sydney, Australia via Twitter. Claire asks, when's Lensshark on tour happening? Thank you for your question, Claire. But right now, there's no immediate plans to travel, do workshops, etc., especially around the world. And that's for two reasons. For one, the podcast keeps me pretty darn close to home. Since the show is twice a week, based on photo news from the previous few days, and takes so long to produce, and we'll talk about more on that later in the podcast here, it's hard to get away. To go on vacation, meet fans from around the globe, etc., I would either need to skip a couple of episodes to free up a week, or pre-record a couple of those episodes. Now, if I pre-recorded episodes, they would be something entirely different than the show that you're accustomed to. I mean, you can't produce shows about news items which haven't happened yet, right? So that presents a little bit of a problem right there. And producing shows on the road isn't ideal either. I did that last October 2015 when I took my daughter for a quick trip to Chicago. That was just a few days, and a good day plus of that was in a hotel room. So if I'm flying across the globe to Australia to meet you and other listeners, spending it in my hotel room producing a show would just be kind of goofy, right? I mean, you can all hang out with me. That'd be kind of weird, though. But, you know, I'm open to suggestions. I just don't like letting people down. I want to make sure you guys have the show that you're used to hearing. I mean, look, here's the 100th episode, and many do it as, you know, one big party, which is fine. But then I think the fans are like, you know what? I really just wanted to hear the photo news. And so that's why I put this at the end of the show. So that's the worst part. You know, many thousands of people look forward to the show each Thursday and Sunday morning, and I take that seriously. I hate it when the shows that I like to listen to are gone for a week or so. I know they deserve time off to go on vacation with their families, etc., but I still miss the show. Now, I'd like to get out and see the world sometime in 2017, but right now, I'm laser focused on keeping the quality of this show up, getting the word out about it, and spending as much time with my family as possible. You know, I spend all day in my home office. They know where to find me, but still, it's not the same, right? There's just a lot to do at the moment. You know, we're still barely, not even, a year old. But of course, at some point, Claire, I'd love to meet fans like yourself and take photos around the globe. That would be awesome, right? You only live once, you know? All right, I don't think anyone's going to be surprised that a bunch of people asked me about how Next came about. And honestly, I'm not entirely sure myself because, you know what, it wasn't planned. It just sort of happened. However, many months ago, one of your fellow listeners told me that it all started when I did a story about someone getting killed while shooting on train tracks. You all know how much I hate that, right? Yeah, you do. Not just because it's dangerous and illegal, because it's been so overdone that it is completely uninteresting now. Please don't suggest shooting on train tracks. And whatever you do, don't bring a couch out to a field and shoot them on it. Don't. It's been so overdone. Come on. Now, according to this listener, I was so frustrated with people dying unnecessarily and in a somber tone said, "Next." Now, that's not something I would have scripted. Otherwise, I'd have done it for every story like I do now, but I didn't. So I could be wrong, but I'm thinking I probably ad-libbed that as I was recording. That seems plausible, and as they're a super fan, they're probably correct. I mean, I didn't go back and look, That would have taken a long, long time. I'm busy enough as it is. So I'm going to go with what they said. And many of you probably know the answer too. It might even be completely different than the one we think it is. Who knows? Now, assuming what this listener said is true, for whatever reason, I started to say next more often on stories where other nonsense had gone on. And we must have had a string of bad stories like that because at some point I was doing it after every story pretty much. Eventually, it became every story. I tried a little bit of an experiment and didn't do it for some stories, but then I started to get emails urging me to put it back. Believe it or not, there are a lot of people out there who say it along with me after each story. That's right. If you're doing it, you're not alone. There are a lot of people out there that are doing it along with you. Listeners have told me that they'll have this show on, and as they're driving with their spouse or kids or whatever, they'll all say, "Next," together. That is just amazing. It blows my mind. I don't know. It's kind of fun. So now, for better or for worse, "Next" has become a signature part of the show. Some people hated it at first, and then it ended up growing on them. I think everyone gets the joke, right? You know, it's an ongoing thing through the story, something to look forward to, blah, blah, blah. It's a lot of fun. It's also the number one thing that most people say to me on Twitter, Instagram, and in emails. So I can imagine that one of these years down the road, when I finally make it to a photography expo, it's going to be the first thing that comes to mind when somebody from across the hall spots me and yells it out. And it's not going to be at all hard to find me because I'm 6'4", so it's going to be pretty darn easy. Next. A bunch of people, of course, asked me what's up with the f8 and 250th of a second thing at the end of each episode. And also, how did I come up with that? I literally did a light meter reading out my window, and whatever ISO I was on at the time, that was the reading. So there you go. And the reason why I do it is because, well, it's cheesy. You know, every photography podcast has something like that, right? And it's just part of the fun. Like this week in Photo Has, it's time to take that lens cap off. And the slanted lens has, you know, keep on clicking. And so I thought, you know, I've got to have something too, right? It's part of having a show. You got to have a beginning, a middle, an end, the whole thing. So that's what I came up with. For better or for worse, that's what it is. Next. Another thing that people wanted to know is how many people listen to the show. Now, as I joked about last time I was on TWIP, I think it was last time, maybe it was the second time back, we're in the five figures. And Frederick Van Johnson loved that. He was dying laughing. I know I didn't exactly narrow it down there for him or for you or for anybody, but that could be anything from 10,000 people to 99,999. I know, that's quite the range, but we're in there. And according to our media host, Libsyn, that puts us in the top 5% of all podcasts. In other words, 95% of the more than 300,000 podcasts that are in iTunes don't get as many downloads as we do each episode. That just blows my mind. And it's thanks to all of you that listen to this show. You know, part of it, of course, was the Petapixel bump. Another huge part was Apple taking note of our show early on and featuring us for a full 2 months in iTunes. That was huge. Most people don't get that. And that just propelled us into the stratosphere. It was amazing. Spotify handpicked us to be the very first photography podcast in their service. And again, all of you guys contribute to the numbers in huge, huge ways by listening and subscribing. You know, we're only 100 episodes in. It's conceivable that someday we're going to be in six-figure downloads because of you guys. But to get there, we're going to need your help to spread the word, of course. If each of you got just a few friends to listen, it would happen. That would be incredible. It just takes actually doing it, of course. You know, that's the key part. Maybe after this episode, reach out to a couple of your photography friends. Let them know about this show. I think that once people listen, they continue to listen. As a matter of fact, when we did our listener survey last December, we found that something like 94% or higher of people continue listening because they love it. It would be a great 100th episode present, don't you think? I'm pretty sure that's what you do for someone for their 100th. 200th, of course, is bacon. Bacon. In case you're wondering, according to our media host stats, most listeners are in the US, as you might imagine, followed by the UK, Canada, Australia, and Germany in that order. More than half of our listeners do so with an iPhone or through iTunes. The rest are a variety of podcast apps for iOS and Android, and some people listen via the website. Now, no one is going to be surprised that the vast majority of our audience are men. We know that too from the audience survey, and I'm not sure why that is, because this show isn't exactly gender specific, right? And there are tons and tons of women who are into photography from the last decade or two back. Huge, huge numbers. I don't know. Maybe women just don't listen to podcasts as much as men. I think that's probably true. And I'm not sure why that is. So if you know of any women who are into photography, tell them about this show, please. That would be a huge help to us. Next. Another question that I got a lot had to do with whether or not I've been recognized in public, and if so, what it was like. Surprisingly, or maybe not, it hasn't happened yet. I lived in a fairly large area down in Utah, and believe it or not, Boise, Idaho isn't exactly tiny. So despite going to places where a decent amount of people are, like Walmart, Costco, the grocery store, etc., no one has said a thing. Now, if I went to a camera store, maybe. A photography expo, no doubt about it. And if you think about it, that makes a lot of sense because those are our people. In any given hour-long visit to, let's say, Costco, how many photography podcast listeners would there even be there? Probably none. Maybe one or two in a day. Maybe. Maybe zero. Now, if you go somewhere where photography enthusiasts are, the odds are going to increase, of course. But when I'm in a store, I don't even have a camera on me aside from my iPhone, let alone in my hands. So I'm a bit in stealth mode there. You know, I'm not wearing t-shirts that say, hey, I'm Sharky, or hey, I have a podcast. I just don't do that. That'd be kind of weird. Listen, as this show gets more and more popular, I'm sure that at some point I'm going to get recognized in public, and I have no idea what that's going to be like. I just hope my wife or my kids are with me, though, because that'd be kind of cool, right? If I'm in line at Costco and someone yells, next, that's going to be pretty darn trippy, and it might be a little bit embarrassing, too. When and if I actually get recognized somewhere, you know I'll tell you all how it went down, right? I just hope it's a good story. It might be really boring. It might be like some 50-year-old dude coming over to me and be like, hey, aren't you that guy from the podcast? Yeah, I am. Oh, well, what are you doing at Costco? Gotta eat, dude, right? Next. Via Twitter, listener Mike Kerr wanted me to talk about the process of putting together an episode of this show. I'm going to try to keep it brief so I don't bore anybody here, but I think it's going to be interesting to you guys. Okay, so it takes a full 2 days to produce an episode, which right there, a lot of people are like, what? It's just a 25-minute show, but hang in there with me. Day one of production for me, which is typically on Tuesdays and Fridays, are when I review posts over at the Petapixel Mothership, and I put together items that I might like to talk about. Then I narrow down that list to a handful that I think are the most interesting and relevant, and those are the stories that I'm going to do. From there, I write up each story, and I don't simply copy and paste the post over on Petapixel and read it. I mean, you could have your computer do that. That's not a podcast. It's got to be a lot more than that. Instead, I work my way through the post, and I write, and along the way, weird things pop into my head, and I write them down. And you know, you've listened to this show, so you know what I'm talking about. I also rarely go back and rewrite anything, so it's pretty much one and done. Now, I think that part of the great success that this show has had is that it is scripted. Most of the podcasts that you hear feature someone talking off the cuff about this or that based on talking points that they have, and that's fine. But I wanted to do something that was a lot more polished than that, and since I had the time to devote to it, I could create the show that I wanted to listen to. And apparently, many, many thousands of people did as well. So many of you have told me in messages, in emails, and in the iTunes reviews that you love that the show doesn't waste your time. I give you the news in my unique style, and we get on with it, right? So it takes me hours to write the stories, along with my other tasks of answering emails, doing social media, and chatting with a lot of you. That's a full day. Now, the very next day, day two of production, also known as Wednesdays and Saturdays, is when I record and edit the show. Since I'm not a trained broadcaster and I mess up a lot, it takes me about an hour to record what would be a 25 or so minute show and about 9 to 12 hours to edit it. Yeah, 9 to 12 hours. That's when people's jaws really drop right there. Again, I'm doing emails, social media, chatting with many of you, etc., etc. But I bet if I sat down and just edited, we're talking probably a solid 7 to 8 hours or so anyhow. You know, the show isn't perfect. I'm not an audio engineer, but I think it's one of the best sounding photography podcasts out there. If you're going to spend time with me twice a week listening to this show, I want it to be good. You know, quality matters to me. Not just in the content and the delivery, but also in the edit. I edit for timing, pacing, however you want to describe it, so it flows and is pleasant and fun to listen to. The production value of this show, along with the content, is a huge, huge part of the success of it, and so many of you have told me that before. So it's definitely worth the effort to me, and I'm really happy with how the show has turned out. Okay, so that's four production days a week, which leaves three other days that are email, social media, working on other projects, etc. If I want to have a day off, I could take it. But I think you guys know me. I work hard. I'm up at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning sometimes. I just love doing what I do. I work a solid 12 to 14 hours or so or more each day in my home office. You know, if you want to be successful, it's not just going to happen. You have to make it happen. And that's what I've always been taught. And it's worked pretty well for me in my life. I mean, this show is evidence of that. If you work hard, you can make things happen. So much for keeping this answer brief, huh? Sorry about that. Next. Via Twitter, outdoor photographer Tony Bynum, who opened episode 65 for us, wants to know, what has the show meant to Sharky James? Well, as you might imagine, Tony, it has been amazing this past year. Like many of you, I've been listening to photography podcasts for many, many years. The likes of This Week in Photo, also known as TWIP, the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast, Tips from the Top Floor, The Art of Photography, and so many others. And now, not only do I know all these people, I've been on many of their shows, which is amazing. Martin had me on his 500th episode last December, I believe it was. Frederick Van Johnson has had me on TWIP a bunch of times. I mean, I'm on there like every 3 to 5 weeks or so. I've met up with Ted Forbes from AOP. Matt Granger had me on a show and a bunch of others too. That is just craziness. If you had told me years ago when I was listening to these shows that I would be on some of them one day, I would have laughed because it would have seemed ridiculous. I was just a listener like everyone else. You know, this show is my comfort zone, right? I've got complete control of what I do here. But being live and speaking off the cuff on video like I am with TWIP and some of the other shows is a little bit scary. But you know what? It's a fun change of pace, too. We have a great time on those shows. I get to talk to and get to know some of the most amazing people in our industry. And that is a huge, huge blessing. And with the exception of a certain individual, the name you're probably thinking right now, everyone has been wonderful. Listen, it's great for one's confidence. You know, if you listen to the very first episode of my old show from December of 2014, or the first episode of this podcast, you can tell that I've settled in and things have greatly improved. And imagine what they're going to be like in a year or two from now. I hope I'll get better at least. Who knows? Do some people get worse? They must, right? As much as I love being a photojournalist, this is clearly what I'm meant to be doing. You know, it's pretty weird. I'm known now more for talking about photography, whereas before, my identity was as an actual photographer. You know, many thousands of people in Arizona who read the newspaper I worked for, and a couple hundred thousand people or so on the website who saw my photos, knew me by my photography. Now I'm known for informing and educating here on the show. It's a great deal of fun, and I think you guys can all see that. I mean, who knows what the future is going to hold? We're just 100 episodes deep so far. I can't even imagine how things are going to be when we hit 200, let alone 500 episodes. Either way, Tony, I hope you and our growing audience is along for the ride with me. Next. Listener Bill in upstate New York dropped me an email and wants to know what's the best part of doing this show. Now, I had to think about this one for a while because there really are so many amazing things that come with doing what I'm blessed to be doing with this podcast. I mean, seriously, it is hard to choose. Doing this show is every bit as amazing as you think it is. It's so much fun and so rewarding. I love it. But if I had to pick just one thing, I would say it's got to be when I get emails telling me that I've somehow inspired them. Whether it's to work harder on their photography, their business, or their lives in general. And it's that last part that always blows my mind. I mean, I'm just a guy who created a podcast that for whatever reason took off and people enjoy it. I mean, we're not curing cancer here, right? But to hear that I've somehow inspired someone to better themselves, that always makes my day. I love what I do, and I know you guys can all see that. Everyone takes something a little bit different away from the show. You know, some are here to be up to date on the industry, get the latest news, find out about the latest gear, etc. Others use it to pick up tips and tricks from my experience as a photojournalist, and others are here to be entertained. And you know what? Those are all valid reasons. Whatever reason you tune in, I want you to know that I appreciate each and every one of you. Now, most of you I'll never have the pleasure of communicating with, let alone meeting in person. But you're out there, and I feel you. When I created my old show, I started where everyone did, and that's zero listeners. I would check the stats, and whoa, you know, someone in New York was listening, and then England, and then Costa Rica, and then Australia. It was unbelievable. photography lovers in some 219 countries and territories listen to the show that you're listening to right now. That is beyond awesome to me. It's still the same experience at the mic when I record, but now enough people to fill a stadium are listening, and I just can't complain. You will never hear me complain about doing this show. Thank you all for your questions, and with that, I'll see you all in episode 101. Well, it's f8 2/50 of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.
Airplanes of all types, people mowing their lawns. Don't they know it's our 100th episode? I guess they wanted to be a part of it. I mean, listen to that. In case you're wondering, it's not trailing a banner that says, Happy 100th episode. It's also not skywriting either. That would take a while to do.
This is Doug Kay, host of All About the Gear on the TWIP Network, and you're listening to episode 100 of the one podcast I never miss, the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Snark... No. The Petapixel Photography Podcast with Snarky J... No. The Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. I think I got it right that time.